all people who are interested in the kind of technical details of the presentation. Okay, so the converse about epistemological principle, and then there are a couple of principles that have been discussed or are interesting that together form the view that you would call knowledge first evidentialism. So one principle is the evidentialist idea. The evidentialist idea says that you should believe everything that's you should believe what is supported by your evidence. And then the other idea is this knowledge first epistemology idea that what is your evidence? Well, your evidence is what you know. And so if you put the two things together, you get the idea that you should believe exactly what's supported by what you know. And this idea encounters a problem, which I call the new evil demon problem. So you can have a pair of cases where, which we now often call the good case and the bad case, such that in the good case, you know that something is the case, you know that there is a red ball in front of you. And then in the bad case, everything seems to you as in the good case in some way, but you do not know the thing in question. So maybe there is some tricky light that, there's a red light that shines on the white ball, and so it looks red, but it's not red. So you think you know that it's red, but it isn't. So you have this pair of cases, and the extreme version of this pair of cases is when you're deceived by an evil demon. And one thing that seems to be the case is that while these two cases differ in what the person knows, so there is a big difference in knowledge between the two cases, there is no difference in rationality. So whatever is rational to believe in the one case is rational to believe in the other. Whatever is rational to do in one case is rational to do in the other. There will be some little typos here and there. So if what you should believe is what's supported by what you know, and we understand what you should believe as what's rational to believe, then it seems problematic that it seems to conflict with this idea that there are these cases where there are drastic differences in knowledge, but no difference in rationality. So one reaction that people have to this pair of cases is that, there is a difference in what you should believe. Like when you are in the good case, you should believe that you're seeing that there is a red ball. And then when you're in the bad case, you shouldn't believe that there is a red ball because in fact there is no such thing. So this might be stated in terms of what you should believe. It might be stated in terms of justification. So Clayton, for instance, thinks that in the bad case, you're not justified in believing that there is a red ball because in fact there isn't and you don't know that there is one. In the good case, you are justified in thinking that there is a red ball. But I think this reaction is not plausible if we focus on what we call rational belief or reasonable belief. You know, when we say like, oh, it's reasonable to think that and so on. I think there is a notion here that's normative and under which there is no difference between the two cases. So that seems to be a problem for the knowledge-first evidentialism view. But it's only a prima facie problem because it could be... So one way to accommodate the idea that rationality is the same even though knowledge differs is to say that the different bodies of knowledge happen to support the same beliefs. And so you do have different bodies of knowledge, but they do support the same belief. So there is this kind of solution, and there are two problems with this solution, so this kind of accommodating solution. The first problem you can state as follows, so there are this asymmetric good-bad case thing. So you have two propositions. So one proposition B is that there is water in the basement, and the other proposition G is that there is water in the garage, and now you need some water to go for a run. In the good case, you are in a good case with respect to both propositions. In the bad case, you are in a good case with respect to one proposition. You know that there is water in the basement, but you don't know that there is water in the garage. You're into a, you know, evil demon-like case with that. You're just under some illusion. You left a bottle of water there, and for totally unexpected reasons, somebody had to take this water away. So if you look at what you know in a good case, you know that there is water in both places. And so if you do a little decision table, you say, what should I do? Should I go to the basement, or should I go to the garage? And it's okay to be indifferent, because both options have the same result. But if you look at the bad case, if you look at what the person knows, there is a given what the person knows, there is one possibility in which going to either is good, but there is also a possibility compatible with what they know, where going to the basement would be good, but going to the garage would be bad. And then by a standard principle called dominance, it follows that in the bad case, it's not rational to be indifferent, if that was the case. So even if we, that would be a case where the difference in knowledge has to make a difference in rationality if we apply the standard principle. So that's a problem for the idea that even though the bodies of knowledge are different, they rationalize the same thing. And then another problem is a bit more technical. It has to do with conditionalization. It's the idea that if you conditionalize on what you know, in the good case, you should get probability one for the proposition that you know. By the rationality principle, in the bad case, you should also have probability one for the proposition you know. So if you take the red ball case, in both cases, you should have a probability one that there is a red ball in front of you. But then in the bad case, it's possible to then learn that there is tricky lightning. And in reply to that, you should lower your credence that the ball is red, or your degree of belief that the ball is red. But it's unclear how you would do that by conditionalization. So that's a problem for this kind of knowledge approach. I mentioned the problem because the view I'm going to present solves it. So in view of this kind of problem, or actually independently of this kind of problem, epistemologists do not adopt the knowledge-first evidentialist view I have stated. Most of them don't even discuss it. I think they think that it's clear from the start, from this new evil demon consideration, that it will not work. And so they adopt other views where either they reject the idea that your evidence is what you know. For instance, they think that your evidence is something weaker, like your internal experience or something like that. Or they reject the evidentialism idea that what's rational it's rational to believe what's supported by what you know. And the view I'm going to present today is a view that tries to rescue or maintain knowledge-first evidentialism by changing the conception of support, what it is for what you know to support a set of belief. And the general, I call this view epistemic optimism. So the idea, you know, an optimist maxim is the idea that if you can tell that things are going bad, just assume that they are going good, that they are doing well. And epistemic optimism is if you cannot tell that things are epistemically wrong, then assume that they are epistemically good. And the idea is that when somebody is in the bad case, they are in no position to know or to tell that they are mistaken, that they are in this misleading situation. So they should believe just as if they were in the good situation. And I think there is a bunch of views in the recent literature that define this kind of idea. There are several versions of the view. So the two existing one is one that I call the inner side of knowledge view, which says that it's rational to believe something if you are internally like somebody who would know that thing. Then there is a view recently published by Sven Rosenkrantz in Mind that it basically defends the idea that being justified in believing P, so for our purpose being that it's rational to believe P, is the view that you don't, it's not being in position to know that you're not in position to know something. And here I'm going to defend, sorry, there's a typo here, it's the global one. So I'm going to defend a view that I call Sven Rosenkrantz's view the local epistemic optimism, and I'm going to defend a global epistemic optimism, you're going to see the problem. Okay, so this is the plan. I'm going to present the view and then see some of its implications, and then I'm going to compare it with these other views. Okay, so the central idea of my view is that, you know, in the literature and in my introduction, I've used the notion of a bad case. There are these bad cases, like the evil demon case is a bad case. A normal perceptual situation is a good case. The situation where you're looking at a white ball illuminated by red lights, that's a bad case. The situation where you're looking at a red ball is a good case. Getty cases are bad case, and then the case where everything goes fine is a good case. So we have this intuitive notion of a bad case, and then I'm putting forward a conjecture about what the bad cases are. And the idea is that the bad cases are, there are cases where it's compatible with everything that you know, that your total body of knowledge is strictly more than what it actually is. Right? So it's going to be like, we're going to say what is true. So this says two things. It's like, so you take a good case, a bad case pair. Namely, so in the bad case, it's compatible with what you know, that you could know strictly more, and the situation in which you know strictly more is a corresponding good case, right? So in the bad case, there is a good case, which would be a case which is compatible with everything that you know, and it's a case where you know strictly more than what you know. So I'm going to spell that out and try to defend this conjecture. So the one direction of the conjecture tells you that in the good case, you know strictly more than in the bad case. And I think that's fairly obvious. So I can think of an example of one proposition that the brain of that, or the victim of Descartes' demon, knows, and the guy in the ordinary situation fails to know. There's just like no proposition that the victim of the demon knows, but the guy who's not victim of the demon doesn't know. So I think this direction is clear. If you make a picture of things, so here is how these pictures work. So you have two possible words, or two situations, WB, WG, and the circle is all the situations that are compatible with your knowledge. So if you are in WB, then you think that everything, you know, what you know rules out everything that's out of the blue circle. So in particular, you don't know, in the good case, WG, you know strictly more, that's, you rule out much more situation than in the bad case. So for instance, in the good case, you know that there is a red ball, so that rules out the situation where there is no red ball. In the bad case, you do not know that, so you don't rule out the situation. So this picture is a picture of a word, WG, where somebody knows strictly more than WB. The one circle is strictly into the other, that means they know strictly more. The tricky aspect of the conjecture is the converse. Is it the case that for all the case that you want intuitively to call good case, it is not compatible with what you know, that there would be a situation where you know strictly more than what you do? So we're going to see some test case of that. So first test case is an inexact knowledge situation. So inexact knowledge situation, the standard example is a clock, like a handle of a clock without marks. And when you look at the hand of the clock, you know that it's somewhere around 3, but you don't know exactly where it is. So there is a strongest thing you know about the proposition, about the position of the hand of the clock. And here, let's say it's actually on 3, so that's the blue dot. And the circle is what you know about its position. So you know that it's somewhere between 2 and 4, but that's all you know. So it's compatible with what you know that the hand is at 4. And if it was at 4, you would actually know something different. You would know that it's, you know, between 3 and 5. And the funny thing about the situation is that you don't know that you are not in this other situation where you would know something different. But the thing about this other situation is that it's a situation in which you would know more. So in the actual situation, you're at 3, and you do not know that the clock is not at 2, if the hand was at 4, you would know that it's not at 2. But in that situation, you do not know that. But in this other situation, you would also know less. So in the actual situation, you know it's not at 5, but if it was at 4, you wouldn't know that it's not at 5. So in this situation, if you just consider the different position of the hand, you'd say, it's compatible with what I know that I know more or less, but it's not compatible with what I know that I know strictly more. Yet there is no circle that would be strictly included in the other. Another case, I go over a bit more quickly, we can go back in discussion. Well, maybe it's compatible with what I know that my vision is better. So what I know about the position of the clock is that it's here in the blue circle, but it's compatible with what I know that actually I see a bit better and I know something more about the position of the hand. But what so is it a case where I could know strictly more than what I know? And I'm saying no, because in the actual case, I also know that I do not know precisely where the clock is. So there is this full blue area on the schema, which is the proposition of which I know that I do not know that. And if my vision was more precise, then I wouldn't know that I don't know that. The area of which I know that I don't know that would be itself smaller. So in that case, it's compatible with what I know, that I know more about the position of the hand, but that would go with knowing less about my ignorance about the position of the hand. So again, I don't think it's possible that you know strictly more than what you would know. That what you actually know. It's not compatible with your knowledge that you know strictly more than what you actually know. There is a little glitch that occurs here. What if I'm crazily confident in my powers of seeing the hand of the clock? So suppose I do believe that I know that it's exactly at 3. Then if knowledge requires belief, since I do not believe that I lack the belief that I do not know that the clock is here, then there would be, in the more precise situation, I would know strictly more, because I don't have this knowledge about my ignorance, because I'm overconfident about my knowledge. And because of that, because the notion of knowledge, if it entails belief, is too sensitive to the notion of belief, I will officially my account is framed in terms of position to know. So the real account is a bad case is one such that it's compatible with what you're in position to know, that you are in position to know strictly more than what you actually are. But for the most purposes, we can just focus on knowledge. It's just easier to think about it. A question is, why would this conjecture hold in general? Why would we think that somehow it's part of being in a good case that it's not compatible with what you know, that you know strictly more overall? And here is my suggestion. This, I think maybe what's going on is that in the good case, you're making the most of your situation. You're somehow getting as much knowledge as you can from the situation in such a way that any change in the situation that would allow you to know more would have to make you make less in another direction. Otherwise, you wouldn't be making the most of your situation. And I make clear here that now what I mean by good case is a perfectly good case. I guess that in any ordinary situation, any of us is in a bad case on some respect. Like maybe there's something that I'm rationally believing about my parents, but actually I'm in a bad case about that because they've been hiding some uncomfortable truths. And I think for every person there is something like that. If you focus on part of, for instance, my perceptual situation right now, if we just focus about that part of my knowledge, maybe it fits the official description of a good case that it's impossible with respect to the situation right now that I know strictly more than what I actually do. Okay, so that's the conjecture. And now, given the conjecture, I propose a theory of rational belief. So we can say that a case is epistemically better than the other if everything that's known in the second case is known in the first. So epistemically better means at least as much knowledge. That's epistemically as good as. And epistemically better means strictly more knowledge, like you know everything that the other one does and more than that. A strongly optimal case is one such that there is no case where you know strictly better, and a weakly optimal case, I have to introduce this notion to take into account like infinite chains of increasingly better case. So a weakly optimal one is one such that no strongly optimal case is better than it. So basically, a strongly optimal case is a case where it's not compatible with what you know that you would know strictly more. A weakly optimal case is either a strongly optimal one, or it's a case where there is an infinite chain of even better and better and better and better case in front of you. Just ignore it for the moment. It's just like, we can get back into it, but really it's mostly a formal thing. I don't know exactly what to think about this case, but it just makes the formal thing better to treat them as being optimal. Okay, so the view is this, is that what is rational for you to believe is what is known at all the optimal cases compatible with what you know. So we'll see some application of that and maybe you'll get used. So, yes. So here is how the view is applied. So in a good case, So the view says it's rational to believe what is known at all the optimal cases that are at least as good as your case, where there is at least as much knowledge as you have. So let's apply it to the inexact knowledge case. So in the inexact knowledge case, so suppose the hand of the clock is at 3, I know it's between 2 and 4, that's my area of knowledge. It's compatible with my knowledge that the clock is at 4, in which my knowledge would be the red circle. It's compatible with my knowledge that the clock is at 2, in which my knowledge would be the blue circle. There is no case compatible with my knowledge where I know strictly more. So my own case is actually optimal by my definition. So I'm justified in believing, and it's the only optimal case that is at least as good as me in the sense of having all the knowledge that I have. So in this kind of case, the account says you should know exactly what you should believe exactly what you know. It's rational to believe exactly what you know, which is a result that I like. Like, this is not a misleading situation. Your knowledge should be it's rational to believe exactly what you know. By contrast, in a bad case, like in an evil genius situation, I mean the blue dot here, it's compatible with what I know that I'm in this case where I see a red ball. Actually, I do not see a red ball. I do not know that there is a red ball, but it's compatible with what I know that I'm in that case. And in that case, I would know strictly more than what I actually do. The account say you should believe what is known in that case. So you should believe what the guy in the good case knows. So that's the first two applications. There are more subtle evil genius cases. So suppose I hallucinate a little rock. And in fact, there exist two rocks that are like that. Call the first Alfred and the second one Bob. There are two good cases. There is a good case where somebody sees the rock Alfred, and there is a good case where somebody sees the rock Bob. But the rocks they look the same. They are the same. When I hallucinate a rock with that shape, my visual experience is the same as the visual experience of the guy who sees Alfred, and the same as the visual experience of the guy who sees Bob. So here's what I'm saying. The Alfred guy knows this singular proposition that this rock is here. Namely, in their case, it's the proposition that Alfred is here. It's a proposition that's true if and only if that particular rock, Alfred, is here. That's what the person knows. That's the case G1. In the case G2, the person knows that Bob is here. The person knows that this rock is here, and for that person is the Bob rock. In the hallucination case, it's compatible with what you know that you are in the first case, and it's compatible with what you know with what you are in the second case. What the account says is that you're justified in believing things that are known by all the optimal case, at least as good as you. So here you wouldn't be justified in believing that Bob is here, you wouldn't be justified in believing that Alfred is here. In fact, basically at the end you will be justified in believing that some rock is here. That's all you get in an hallucination case. Okay, now defeater. So here is an interesting thing. Suppose you start with the with a bad case where you're looking at a white ball illuminated red. So this is this kind of case at the bottom where you're in a bad case. In fact, for all you know, you could be in the case where you see a red ball. In fact, you don't see a red ball, but you think you do. Suppose then that you learn that the light is tricky, that in fact there is red light shining on the ball. Then what I'm saying, you end up in that case at the bottom where now you know that you do not know that it's a red ball. And then if that's the case, then that case, the red ball situation, the good case, is now something you don't know, you know that you are not in that case, so it's not an optimal case that's strictly better than your case, because in the good case, you do not know that you are not in the good case. In this defeat case, you know that you are not in the good case, so the knowledge is not strictly more, and the account gives you that the result that when you discover that the red ball is that the ball is lit red, then it's not rational anymore to believe that it is red. So that's an interesting result, because the account gives you that even if your knowledge strictly increases, some of your rational beliefs have to drop. And you know, so that's the defeat phenomena. When I didn't know that I was in a misleading situation, it was rational to believe that there is a red ball here. And then I strictly increase my knowledge by knowing that I'm not in the good case, and that makes it now irrational to believe that the ball is red. So you get some defeat phenomena. Okay, I'll just leave that aside for the moment. Preface paradox, I'll just tell you what the account says about the preface paradox so you can argue about it if you want. So for, you know, preface paradox is, my favorite version is Brandon Feidelson one, where somebody makes a study of all the books published in history and finds out that all the books published in history so far, each one of them had one mistake in them. And so the person published this 20-volume history of all the books published, and the whole history says every big book contains a mistake. And of course, in their preface, they write like, well, as all my history shows, every book contains mistakes, so it's almost certain that my book contains a mistake. Or they even write, my book contains a mistake as proven by my study. So the claims, the overall set of claims is contradictory. It cannot be that all the claims in the book are true, and also the claim that all these claims, that some of these claims is false, is true. So basically, here's, let n be the number of claims in the book, including the preface. Let k be the number such that you know that you do not, you know that there are k claims in the book that you do not know. So k has to be one at least, because they are jointly all contradictory, so one of them must be false at least. So it cannot be that you know all the claims in the book, so there has to be at least one that you don't know. The account says that whatever you know, so whatever the claims in the book are actually known, it's rational to believe them. And then otherwise, it's rational to believe the disjunction of all conjunction of n minus k claims. So basically, if the only thing you know is that two claims in the book are false, and there are 100 claims in the book, it's rational for you to believe that 98 claims in the book are true. So you might like it or not like it, but that's what he says about the preface. Okay, so I'll just quickly go through the formal things, but you know, we can look at the handout. So you can model that. So you use a standard model for knowledge, and then you define epistemically as good as in terms of knowledge, and then you have for each word, the top word relative to that word are the optimal word that are at least as good as that word. This is the formula that states it. The formula is such that it's always guaranteed that there is a top word. So if no word is strictly better than you, or if there's only an infinite chain of ever better word, then your word is the top. Otherwise, if you're in a bad case, then some other words are going to be the top. And then the semantics for the J operator, which I use for rational belief, is going to be that JP is true at a word if at every word in the top relative to that word, P is known. So here's what this account implies. So first, what is rational to believe supervenes on what is known. So if your knowledge is the same across two cases, then what's rational to believe across the case is the same. It follows that what you know, it's rational to believe. That's a nice result. It actually follows from the account. It's not presupposed. So there is an idea in the epistemology literature that it's irrational to believe both P and I don't know P. And we do get that. It cannot be the case that you know that you don't know P and that it's rational to believe P. And it cannot be the case that it's rational to believe that you don't know P and it's rational to believe P. So it's never rational to believe P and I don't know P. Knowledge is not equivalent to justification. They are justified false belief. And knowledge is not equivalent to not knowing that you don't know. The set of things that is rational to believe has to be consistent, a close under implication. And in the optimal word, what you know is exactly what is rational to believe. I have a logic so here is the logic that's definitely all of this is sound, and the completeness proof turns out to be a bit tricky. I have one step missing, but I think it's complete. So the logic is a standard logic, like close under implication for K and G, J. We have the factivity, the idea that if you know something, it's true. We have the idea that if you know something, it's rational to believe it. And then we have the idea that if it's justified to think that you don't know, then it's not justified to believe the thing in question. So that's the no more paradox principle. And then it turns out that we have this funny closure principle that was a surprise to me, but it follows from the semantic, that if it's rational for you to believe that, if you know that, it's justified to believe that. And it is rational to believe the first thing, then it's rational to believe the second. Funny principle, you can think about it. You can look at the other form of closure at the bottom, they are maybe a bit more intuitive. If it's rational for you to believe that, if this is rational, that's rational. And it's rational for you to believe the first, then it's rational for you to believe the second. Some of the things that follow is that what you're justifying believing is consistent. So it cannot be that I keep interchanging justified and rational, but it should be clear it's the same thing. So it cannot be that it's rational for you to believe both P and not P, which is also a nice result. And we get some principles that sound like what internalist epistemologists like. So one is that if it's rational for you to think that it's rational to believe P, then it is actually rational to believe P. And if it's rational for you to believe that it's not rational to believe P, then it is not rational to believe P. So basically, when it comes to claim about what's rational to believe, rational belief is infallible. So a rational belief that is rational to believe P it cannot go wrong in this account. Even though rational belief in general can go wrong. So if it's rational to believe that P, it might be that P is false. So that's a striking internalist style account, even though justification is, it's a combination of view that internalists like, that justification is fallible, but nevertheless that being justified in believing that you're not justified makes it the case that you're not justified, or the same principle with rationality. Okay, so I can mention, compare the view with others. So there is this view that the one view in the ballpark of epistemic optimism is the view that I call the inner side of knowledge. It says that it's rational to believe something if there could be, somebody that that is in the same internal state as you are could know that P. So it's, you know, it's intuitive when you think of the brain of that. It's like the brain of that is rational for them to believe that they are sitting by the fire because there is an internal duplicate of them. I mean, it could you could have an internal duplicate of them that actually knows that they are in sitting by the fire. So there are two problems with this view. One is well known, is that, well, if a proposition is necessarily false, there is no internal duplicate. Nobody knows it. It's impossible to know it, so it's impossible to have an internal duplicate that knows it. So it's never rational to believe something necessarily false. But, you know, there are necessary false claims like, you know, like identity claim, like that this person is that person, that are sometimes rational to believe even though they are necessary false. It might be rational to believe that water is not H2O, even though it's necessary false. So that's a problem for this account. Another problem is, remember the case with the two rocks. So maybe I hallucinate a rock. Now, for every rock on the universe, there could be an internal duplicate of me that knows that this rock is here. So this account ends up saying that it's rational for me to believe that for each possible rock, it's rational for me to believe right now that this rock is here. So you have like this whole bunch of beliefs that are, if you make them that the belief that only this rock is here, they are actually mutually inconsistent. And they come at rational to believe in the according to this view. So we avoid both problems with the global epistemic optimism. First, because even if P is a necessary falsehood, it could be that you fail to know that you do not know P. And so it could be that for all you know, there is a person that knows strictly more than you that does know P. That's an epistemic possibility, even if P is necessarily false. So you can have that, you can have rational belief in falsehood in the account. And then the second problem is basically this subtle new evil demon case that you have on the handout that I already covered. The other account that's so just came out, Sven Rosenkrantz suggests that it's rational to believe P if you are not in position to know that you are not in position to know that P. He states it about justification, but I'll talk about of rationality. So he has a bunch of principles that he likes or that he defends, and in particular, the one that I want you to focus on is the one that say, if you do not know that you do not know that P, then it's rational for you to believe P. Or actually in his version, if you're not in position to know that you're not in position to know P, then it's rational to believe P. That's the main principle that makes the difference between me and him. Otherwise, I accept all these other principles. And then the interesting thing to note is that for him to have the last principle, the Nomurian paradox principle, that if you're justified in, you cannot be justified in believing P and I don't know P, that's what the last principle say. For him to have that, he has to accept that justification is luminous in the sense that whenever you're justified in believing something, you're in position to know that you're justified in believing that thing. Because basically, you take the last principle, contrapose it, this says, if I'm justified in believing P, then I'm not justified in believing that I do not know P, and then not justified in believing that, not justified in believing something in his given this E2, that means knowing something. So not being justified in thinking that you not know P is actually knowing that it's not the case that you know, that it's not the case that you know P. So basically, he's committed to, if you're justified in believing P, you know that you're justified in believing P. Okay, and so his problem is that the problems with Zakon, he has to idealize the notion of being in position to know a lot. So for instance, this piece of equipment is not justified in believing that the light is on. It's just a machine, it doesn't have a mind, so it's not justified in believing that the light is on. So by its account, this piece of equipment is in position to know that it doesn't know that the light is on. So he has to, and he does make this idealization. It's like, you have to think like somehow if the machine had a mind, it would realize that it's not in position to know that the light is on. I mean, maybe you can avoid this kind of problem, but by focusing on minds. But still, even with minds, if an agent lacks certain concept, then they are not justified in having beliefs with the concept. So by his account, they have to be in position to know that they are not able to know the things with this concept. So he has to idealize a lot the notion of being in position to know. In inexact knowledge cases, he has to say that you are justified in believing more than what you know. Because, take the clock case, it's even though what I know is this, is take the proposition that the hand is not here. I do not know that I don't know that, because if the hand was here, I would know that. So I'm justified in believing that it's not here, and I'm justified in believing that it's not here. So I'm actually justified in believing more than what I know in this inexact knowledge case. Relatedly, he has to say that the set of justified thing is inconsistent. So if you think of this kind of situation, the top one, you do not know that you do not know the G1 thing, and you do not know that you do not know the G2 things, but they are mutually inconsistent. So you get an inconsistent set of beliefs. You get an inconsistent set of belief in the preface, which might be intuitive in the preface, for instance, but at least you cannot use the set of inconsistent belief as input to conditionalization. Okay, so I just conclude. So I just want to say my account avoids this consequence. I don't have the idea that justification is luminous. I have the thing that if it's rational for you to think that it's rational to you for you to believe P, then it's rational for you to believe P. But the opposite is not true in my account. It's not the case that if it's rational for you to believe P, you're in position to know that it is, and it's not the case that if it's rational for you to believe it, it's rational for you to believe that it's rational for you to believe it. So I don't have this luminosity principle. My set of rational belief is consistent, and I don't have to idealize the notion as much as he has. So the endpoint of global epistemic optimism is that basically it's a two-tiered view of evidence. On the one hand, there is the bottom, the rock bottom evidence. Knowledge is the thing that determines what's rational for you to believe in the way that the definition states. So that's what defines what's rational to believe. And then what's rational to believe in turn says what's rational to do. So in the initial case with the basement and the garage, my account will say, in both scenarios, it's rational for you to believe that there is a bottle in the basement and there is a bottle in the garage. And then you can use this rational belief set as the input of conditionalization and as the input for action. So that's what you end up. We have this two-tiered view. So the rational belief plays the role of evidence in the sense of rationalizing action and being what you should believe. And knowledge plays the role of evidence in being like the basically the epistemic basis of all these things. Okay, and then some notable feature is it's a knowledge-first view that has the externalized aspect of knowledge-first in the sense that everything is defined in terms of knowledge. I didn't have to have another premise. I didn't use dispositions to know. I didn't use normality ranking over possible ways like people do. I didn't use the notion of internal duplicates. It's a sheer knowledge-only definition of rational belief. There is consistency, which makes it compatible with an account of conditionalization, but it gives you defeat. You can withdraw from certainty, which differs from some, avoids the kind of some kind of problem of that I mentioned initially. It gives you internalist-friendly verdicts on the new evil demon cases, and it gives you a bunch of principles linking knowledge and justification that many people thought were kind of attached to internalism, even though it's an external knowledge first view, and it doesn't endorse dubious luminosity claims. Thank you.